This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Broadcasting from the WEEI studios. Powered by Verizon. 93.7 WEEI-FM and HD1. Lawrence, Boston. An Odyssey Sports Station. This is Dan Ball on WEEI.
We are indeed feeling good here on this Sunday morning on WEEI. Thanks so much for being with us just after 10 a.m. on Sunday, May the 25th, 2025. Thanks for being here on 93.7 WEEI, or if you're joining on one of the affiliates, hello to you on the Cape, Providence, Rhode Island, Springfield, Massachusetts, Worcester, Mass., Portland, Maine, as well as Keene, New Hampshire, Claremont, New Hampshire, and White River Junction, Vermont. If you're not joining us on any of those stations, then you're probably listening on the Odyssey app, and if you haven't downloaded that already, make sure you do. AUDACY to get, well, live broadcasts like this. You can also get podcasts, original content from some of our fantastic writers, and so much more. Dan Ball with you here on this Sunday morning, taking you up until Red Sox pregame coverage at 12:35. Final game of what has just been a cluster of a series against the Baltimore Orioles. Rain out on Thursday, doubleheader on Friday, rain out for the second game of a doubleheader on Friday, doubleheader Saturday, and now you get the final game of a four-game series, and the final game of a 10-game homestand that has been all over the place. And unfortunately, a lot of it has nothing to do with play on the field. It's been Alex Cora, it's been Alex Bregman, and now it's been Marcelo Meyer. And that is where we're going to begin. Later on in the show, we'll get into the New England Patriots news and notes from their OTAs this week. Some notes from Mike Reese about a follow-up performance by Drake May in day three on Thursday. Ironic that the positivity around Drake May comes for the day when none of the reporters could actually see it live, but we'll get into
Reese
that.
Is writing about it.
Well, that's also true. And that is the voice of my good friend Brian Frazoco, who's behind the glass today. Good morning, Brian. How are you?
How's it going, Dan?
It's going good. It's going good. Great to have you here. Always nice to see a smiling, familiar face from the WEEI Afternoons program here. So it is Brian and I with you up until 12:35. In our final segment, before we get into Red Sox pregame coverage, we'll catch up with Joe Weil, who is your pregame host this afternoon leading into Game 4 of the series. So he'll take over at 12:35 with pregame coverage for the Red Sox, get you into first pitch. 1:35 in the final game of the series in the homestand for the Boston Red Sox. We begin with a report from Christopher Smith of Mass Live. Red Sox Alex Cora hinted that some roster moves may be coming. The quote after yesterday's doubleheader read as follows. There's going to be guys down for a few days. We might need to make decisions based on the roster on what we need not only tomorrow, but in the upcoming days. But that's the nature of the business. It sucks, but it's a reality of it. And that quote caught my eye late last night into early this morning for a couple different reasons, because it began as more of just a housekeeping note, or at least that's what it felt like. We're going to have some guys that are down for a few days. That felt like a nod to the bullpen, which we'll get into in just a moment. But then, but that's the nature of the business. It sucks, but it's a reality of it. That felt a little bit more poignant and a little bit more permanent, maybe, because there's a difference between you're sending a guy down or you're making a move for a couple of days, you're putting a guy on the 10-day injured list, you're using one of his options to send him down to Worcester just to get a breather, and it really sucks the kind of roster move that we're going to need to make. So that brought up the difference between what I think that means and what I hope that means. And I think we already got a taste of what I think this means, which is they're going to be doing some tinkering around the bullpen. They already started for game two of the doubleheader yesterday with Sean Newcomb getting DFA'd and then Luis Guerrero being brought up. He threw a fastball, a slider, and a changeup yesterday, did Guerrero in his outing. Gave up his first earned run in the major leagues. So I think that's worth noting. It was his 13th game, an inning and a third. The accuracy wasn't there. He walked three, gave up a couple of hits and a run. But through the 14 hardest pitches for the Red Sox, he was up in the consistently 95 to 96 range with his fastball. I also wanted to mention on Sean Newcomb's behalf, it wasn't always pretty. He may as well have just switched to pitching from the stretch permanently, because I can't remember an inning where he didn't give up a leadoff hit or a leadoff walk. However, when he gets DFA'd, it was the first time appearing in double-digit major league games in a season for him since 2022. He pitched in 20 games that year to the tune of an 8.78 ERA. So he was bringing back more shades of when he was a highly touted prospect for the Braves in the 2018 to 2019 range. And he ate some meaningful innings to try to do his best to rest the bullpen. And it was 79 pitches on May the 18th, then 32 more on May the 21st. And then he threw 28 yesterday, ended up getting DFA'd, and that's where Guerrero comes in. So that was the first move that kind of was a nod to what Cora said after the fact, which is we're going to have some guys that may be going down for a couple of days. So what I think is there may be a few more bullpen related moves, because as KJ talked about during his show and as we alluded to during the crossover, four innings is just about all you've been able to expect. What Lucas Giolito did in game two was a revelation, because now Hunter Dobbins is only a two times through the rotation or through the lineup guy. Brian Baio has not been able to get out of the fifth inning in four or five starts to this point. Garrett Crochet, well, that seemed to be more user error, and we'll get into the Alex Cora of it all later on in the hour. But You're now dealing with a rotation that hasn't had guys consistently going 5 to 6 innings in the better part of a month. And, you know, Walker Buehler's was maybe just a little bit too much emotion boiling over in his return. And there's a lot of history between him and the Mets and him and Francisco Lindor. I understand that, but still, you also put your team behind the eight ball. So my guess is what he's alluding to. And the boring answer to it is there's going to be some tinkering to the bullpen. The two names that I wonder about for two different reasons are Brendan Bernardino and Liam Hendricks. Bernardino is not necessarily performance related. He's usually the first guy out of the bullpen when there's a mess that needs to be cleaned up. He's been the fourth inning, fifth inning, kind of get me to the back end of the bullpen guy that Cora's been able to rely upon. The only reason that I mention him is because he's been heavily taxed. I think he's thrown in four out of the last 5 days or something to that effect. And he has options left on it. He has an option left on his contract. So I would wonder if they feel the need to refresh the bullpen a little bit. Would Bernardino be a guy, especially considering how many lefties you now had, as you lost one with Newcomb, but you'd still have two in Wilson and Chapman. The group of five, Chapman, Slayton, Wilson, Garrett Whitlock, Greg Weissert, who, by the way, has only given up earned runs in one of his last 13 outings. And it was that disaster of an outing, or just a game for the Red Sox in Detroit. I think those five aren't going anywhere. You've already made a move, Newcomb for Guerrero. I would wonder if maybe there's just a breather for Bernardino coming up. And then we need to talk about Liam Hendricks. And it's been a really fascinating and concerning week for Liam Hendricks, because he went on record a couple of different times being less than happy with his usage, which suggests to me either it wasn't communicated to him coming out of spring training and when he came back from injury what his role was going to be, or it was, and he just can't accept it.
If you had to guess, which one would it be?
I worry it's a communication issue. Because
so do I, because how's the communication been this year around the team?
Exactly,
in general?
Exactly. I have no reason to believe, and Brian, I'm curious to get your thoughts on that idea just as a whole. The communication between Craig Breslow, Alex Cora, and the players. And I guess now you even bring in John Henry into this, because they had to bring in John Henry. The communication has seemingly been a very big issue and kind of a recurring trend on this year's team.
Well, and we know about the Devers thing because he practically took a bullhorn and sent it to the media because nobody really wanted to ask the question, but he, you know, really just put it in all of our faces. But I think there's more than that. I mean, why isn't anybody asked about Trevor Story moving to third?
Right.
Why isn't anybody asked Christian Campbell about the conversations that he's had about what position are you going to play on a consistent basis? I feel like there's been very little communication across the organization so far this year. From the moment that they signed Bregman, I feel like nobody knows where they're playing, what days they're playing, when they're supposed to be pitching, when they're supposed to be coming in for relief. I feel like Cora's been checked out to some extent, or he's not really in control and they've just sort of decided and they're just going to kind of let him, everybody fly by the seat of their pants.
Can you expand for a moment on what you mean by Cora is checked out?
Well, I don't know. I just felt like, especially in 2018, and that's sort of an easy year to go to because they won the World Series, he felt like an aggressive manager, right?
Sure,
when he came
sure.
in, especially coming from a guy like John Farrell, it felt like Cora was an aggressive manager. I feel like he's lost some of that this year. And now, I don't know if that's because of the money, and I think you could point to other times in the last couple of years. I think the obvious example is that Kyle Bearclaw, or whatever the hell that guy's name was, a couple of years ago against Houston, where you practically saw Cora throw up his hands and say, I give up. Look at the crap that you gave me. And he was pointing directly at Chaim Bloom when he made that decision
that
to leave that guy out to dry. Completely. And I just sort of wonder a little bit if he's still doing that. And I don't think he can do it the way that he's done it in the past few years, like the Kyle Bearclaw example, because he was the one who signed the deal. He didn't have to sign for $7 million a year. But he put ink to paper, said, I want to be here for the next however many years. What was it, three-year deal, four-year deal, whatever it was?
Yeah,
three-year deal. Yep. I want to stay here. I want to stay in Boston. Okay, you made your bed. You have to lie in it. You can't no longer complain about the roster that we give you because you were the one who signed here. You could have gone to the Yankees, and I know they ended up signing Aaron Boone, and they went to the World Series, and who knows how that would have shaken up if Cora hadn't signed there. But regardless, I'm sure there would be a lot of teams who are interested in bringing in Cora. Maybe not for the same amount of money, but I think a lot of teams would have wanted a manager with that kind of experience, who's won a World Series, who's had some success here in Boston. Yet, he was the one who decided to come here because, what, his daughter still went to school here, and I'm not criticizing him for missing the game on Monday. Let me get that clear. I'm not criticizing him for that, but maybe that was important for him. His family's here. His daughter went to school here. That's why he wanted to stay, so he can no longer criticize the organization for the lack of talent that they put around him.
I want whatever coffee Brian had this morning. 617-779-7937. Points are well taken. We'll continue the Alex Cora conversation throughout the hour because it's been a week, I would say, to forget for the Red Sox manager, but we'll get into some of the details and revisit some of Brian's thoughts coming up later on. You can join the conversation on the phone or via text. We're talking Boston Red Sox here in this 10 o'clock hour on WEEI. So the first half of the comments from Christopher Smith, as he quoted Alex Cora talking about roster changes, are what I thought. And that's more just bullpen maintenance, try to get fresh arms back into this bullpen and hopefully bail out your starters a little bit. Just get guys rested, get them fresh a little bit, and hopefully bide some time until you can get your rotation to the point where they can start going 5 and 6 innings again and at least take some of the pressure off of some of your higher leverage guys. The Liam Hendricks conversation, which we just broached a moment ago, is a really odd one because he talked about his role. He was frustrated. Whether you blame it on communication or just a player being disgruntled, I'm leaning to the side of, I think it's another example of less than stellar communication by the Red Sox. He has still voiced it. Then there were those scum of the earth people who were levying threats against the life of Liam Hendricks and his family, who were saying personal, you know, personal attacks, personal things on social media.
Arcan said it best Friday night, the lowest of the low.
Yeah, that are, you do not deserve to have a phone. You don't deserve to have a license. I want nothing to do with anybody who thinks that it's the least bit okay to say those kind of, against anybody. That's not just being, you know, Hendricks being a public figure, being a member of your favorite team, whatever. That's not okay. So That's all aside. That should not be a part of this at all. And none of what I say about people being on or off the Red Sox is meant as personal ever. This is just a business. Part of the business is being good enough to make the team. On the other side, part of the radio business is being good enough to stay on the radio. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. So Hendrick bleeds into what I hope, which is I hope that the eyes were opened for the collective Red Sox front office group. That's Henry down to Breslow, down to Kennedy, even down to Cora. That when Marcelo Meyer, who we'll talk about next segment, made his major league debut, walked up to the plate, hitting sixth, playing third base, Red Sox fans gave him a standing ovation. He has played exactly zero innings at that point of Major League Baseball. He was a first-round pick, very highly touted prospect, a guy that's been talked about more than most members of the roster, guys that broke camp opening day. I feel like we've said Meyer and Anthony more than half the roster at this point. I've definitely said Meyer and Anthony more than, like, Connor Wong, for example.
Sedan Rafaela.
Exactly. David Hamilton's more of just like a, why do you keep playing? Anyways, he got a standing ovation. This is what Red Sox fans want. Not just they want Marcelo Meyer on the Boston Red Sox. Not just they want Roman Anthony on the Boston Red Sox. They want their favorite team to start being ruthless again, to start building their roster like a champion again, to not make excuses for guys that do not deserve the playing time and the at-bats and the innings that they're getting. Play the best 26 members of your organization on your roster every single night. And so that's what I hope, is that Alex Cora is kind of starting to put out there that, hey, maybe the days are starting to be numbered for Trevor Story being a starter on this team. Realistic? Probably not. He's got an opt-out after this year. He's certainly going to opt in for 3 years and $55 million, I think it is. So he's going to be here. But just because he's going to be in the organization doesn't mean he should just be the starting shortstop of the Red Sox. The Alex Bregman injury complicates that, but that still doesn't mean that we shouldn't be having a conversation about that player. The entire first base conversation, hopefully that means that you'll start to be aggressive about that and make a decision on whether or not Christian Campbell is going to be the guy. And I know Sedan Rafaela started to find his form a little bit at the plate, just numerically speaking, but it seems like every single at-bat, he's still down 0-2, and it just becomes, can he do something with two strikes when he shortens up his swing? It's swing and a miss, foul off, maybe take a ball here, take a ball there, shoot one the other way, maybe do something every now and again. Great defender, not knocking him, but he is the embodiment of a lot of what's been wrong with this offense, which is too many non-competitive at-bats. And maybe it is time to send a bit of a message. Hey, you are a Gold Glove, Platinum Glove level outfielder for this team. But if you're not following our hitting philosophy and you're just going up there and closing your eyes and swinging and hoping you make contact with something that isn't the catcher, then maybe it's time to start exploring what you look like as the super utility player on the Red Sox. So that's what I'm hoping for. What are we really going to see? A tinker in the bullpen here. Maybe you switch out utility guy for utility guy. Maybe you give Yasmani Grandal a chance to be your backup catcher because Wong at this point is unplayable. By the way, Carlos Narvaez. Oh, my goodness. Where would this team be without Narvaez is a question I don't really want to answer right now. But what I'm hoping for is that yesterday's debut for Marcelo Meyer maybe opened up the eyes in the similar vein to when the ownership group was booed so loudly they gave Rafael Devers over $300 million. I'm hoping maybe it has a little bit of that effect and you start to see a bit more aggression with the way this roster is handled. We'll talk about Marcelo Meyer next. And what I want to hear from you at 617-779-7937 are your thoughts on Marcelo Meyer and how this impacts the team moving forward. He is your starting what for the Boston Red Sox moving forward. I'm curious to get your thoughts. I see your phone calls lining up as well. We'll continue the Red Sox conversation here on WEEI on this Sunday morning, Memorial Day weekend here in Boston. It's a beautiful Sunday, and Brian Frazoco is going to tell us what's trending.
The exclusive home for Patriots Monday and Friday.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Yes, here is what's trending now on WEEI and on WEEI.com. The Red Sox split their doubleheader with the Baltimore Orioles yesterday. Sox took game one in extra innings thanks to a 6-5 win and a Rafael Devers walk-off single. Last night, however, not so good. They lost by a score of 2-1. It was Marcelo Meyer's first MLB appearance. He went 0-4. Here's how one of those at-bats sounded.
1-2, two down in the seventh. Kittredge throws. Marcelo swings and misses. He is struck out. Good slider. Not a storybook yet tonight.
not a storybook at all. The final game of this four-game set is today with first pitch at 1:35, and we have the call for you of that game right here on the Shaw's and Star Market, WEEI, Red Sox Radio Network. Shaw's perfecting the art of fresh. Will Fleming, Will Middlebrooks, they'll be on the call, and you got Joe Weil on the Mass Mutual pregame show at 12:35. Walker Buehler will get the nod for the Sox. It will be his first start since his early ejection on Tuesday. Dean Kremer, he'll be on the hill for the Orioles. The NHL playoffs continue today with Game 3 between the Stars and Oilers with puck drop at 3 o'clock this afternoon. That series is tied at a game apiece. The Eastern Conference Finals Game 3 was last night with Brad Marchand and the Florida Panthers beating the Carolina Hurricanes by a score of 6-2. The Hurricanes are now 0-15 in their last 15 Eastern Conference Final games. That's dating back to 2009. The Panthers now lead that series 3-0. The Timberwolves took Game 3 of the Western Conference Finals last night with a blowout win over the Thunder. That was a score of 143-101. The Thunder still lead that series by a game 2-1. Game 3 between the Knicks and Pacers is today from Indiana with tip-off at 8 o'clock. The Pacers are looking to go up 3-0 in that series. And finally, the New England Revolution played to a 3-3 draw yesterday with Sporting KC. They will take the field again on Wednesday when they take on DC United. The Revolution sit at 10th in the Eastern Conference. I'm Brian Frisoco. That's what's trending on WEI and WEI.com. More Dan Ball coming up after this.
Dan Ball on WEI.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
WEEI.
It's awesome. I've never experienced anything like that in my life. I actually just got done texting my friends and parents about that moment. So it's definitely something I remember for the rest of my life.
It did indeed seem to be the best day in Marcelo Meyer's life. And it also seemed to be one of the better days for Red Sox fans, or better moments for Red Sox fans. Seeing Marcelo Meyer make his major league debut, was it the prettiest at the plate? No. Was there a lot more at stake than just what was happening at the plate in terms of the Red Sox finally bringing him up? Yes. Yes, absolutely there was. 617-779-7937, discussing what you would do with Marcelo Meyer and the organization for the Red Sox in their infield from the 203. I want Meyer at second, Campbell at first, send Sadon to the Woo Sox, and bring up Roman Anthony. Okay, I see the thought process behind that.
Who's playing third in that situation?
That's a great question. Alex Cora, as a matter of fact. So Ramon Vasquez can manage just like everybody seems to want. That further complicates everything. We'll get into that in just a moment. Let's go to the phone lines, though. And Matt in Rhode Island will lead us off. Good morning, Matt. How are you, man?
Hey, Paul. How are you doing today?
What's going on?
You do a great job during the week. You got your own show on the weekend. First and foremost, shout out to Camp Fogarty. That's this U.S. Army National Guard base.
Awesome.
Right down the street from my house.
Yeah.
I would say, you know, it's always thank you for your service, and they always thank you for your support. Love those men and women.
100%. Well put.
Now, ready, Ball, we're moving on to robot umpires because, you know, although Walker Buehler did get tossed and he did leave the team short, I'm kind of getting tired of these umps thinking of the show. And I think that whole thing is ridiculous, so, by the way. So I do have Walker Buehler's back. He's not that kind of guy. Like, it was just kind of ridiculous. Marcel Meyer, he earned his spot in spring training, so it's great to have him up. You know, not playing his natural position, but he'll be fine. Just real quick, I'm from Pompano Beach, Florida. That's Fort Lauderdale. So
okay,
I follow all these high school sports. Roman Anthony has been on the map. I've known this kid, like, been following him since a sophomore in high school when he won Broward County Player of the Year. He gave Marcel Meyer, you know, much love getting sent up. You know he wants to be up here. And I think they do need to bring that up here for many obvious reasons, but to have those three young guys kind of be the core and, you know, make mistakes together and win together. That's what I think they need to do. Well, thanks. Have a good day.
There you go. Thanks, Matt, for the call. Always appreciate it. Lots to get to there. I'm going to go one by one real quick. Robot umpires.
That is absolutely embarrassing from Mike Esterbrook.
Yeah. To avoid embarrassing moments like that from umpires, I understand that. I don't understand why we haven't seen the ABS system put into play. I know that they were testing it in spring training, and I guess it was deemed that it's not major league ready yet. I mean, the last two examples of the issues coming up with called strikes between the Mike Esterbrook incident with Walker Buehler and
what
then
a joke.
Yes, and then the Christian Campbell, hey, that's on me, Christian, with I think it was Laz Diaz who was behind the plate that game. Both of those could have been avoided if you just had the ABS system. And I'm not advocating for completely replace umpires. I think the human element of having these guys is still a very valuable thing. It's too much black and white when it's only technology deciding ball or strike, out or safe. And I don't think we're at the point where the technology is trustworthy enough to just blindly do away with umpires. But every official in every sport has an increased ability to use technology to help improve their jobs. There, we have video review in baseball. We have video review in hockey. They should also have a chip in the puck that shows whether the puck is over the goal line or not, and why we don't have that kind of thing. But you can do it in tennis and you can do it in soccer. Okay, fine. Hockey once again is a step behind when it comes to actually doing things like other sports. Football continues to innovate, and now they're kind of doing away with the chain gang. Now that's the second way of determining first downs because they are advancing their technology. So that is the next logical step, and it's there. And I really don't understand what's taking so long and why it was deemed that this couldn't be a useful tool in 2025 when Major League Baseball has implemented things on a whim year after year after year to try to quote unquote fix the sport. They tried out the pitch clock in the minor leagues and then just kind of implemented it. And then if you remember the whole sticky stuff, accusations that came out and the checks to see if guys have illegal substances on their hands or somewhere on their jerseys to try to help them with pitching, that happened like midway through a season. It happened quick, and then it was just a thing, and then all of a sudden you saw guys like Tyler Glasnow start to get hurt because they were changing the way these guys were pitching without giving them the proper time to ramp up. So of all the times for Major League Baseball to be overly cautious with their rule changes, this is a very odd one for them to draw the line for me. But point well taken on that. Marcelo Meyer, great to see him. I am a little surprised that Roman Anthony is the last one to come up when you just look at the body of work for these guys. But you still don't have a spot, an obvious spot for Roman Anthony right now. I know a lot of fans would have liked to see the Red Sox be aggressive and bring up Marcelo Meyer, regardless of what was happening injury-wise. Unfortunately, that was not the case, but now he's here. And I would like to believe in my heart of hearts that he is not going to be sent down. That when Alex Bregman returns, whenever that may be, and it seems like it's going to be a while. So all these conversations that we're having about he's going to play here, he's going to play here, really aren't going to matter all that much. It seems like for at least a month, maybe more, because it was said by Alex Cora, very similar to the significant injury that he had, same injury, other side that he had in Houston, and I believe it was 2021, and he missed a long time. So you could hear the emotion when Bregman was speaking to the media. He knew how significant this was. And I think it's also fascinating to note that the injury happens in game one on Friday. He then is reported to have woken up and felt worse on Saturday. And that is when Marcelo Meyer was scratched from game one of the doubleheader in Worcester and told he was being called up. That's because it's not just a quick trip to the injured list and then back. This is a significant, probably multiple month thing that's going to keep Bregman out. The number three hitter, guy that's been the heartbeat of this team for the most part, most consistent heartbeat of this team since day one of spring training. And Rob Bradford noted that it's ironic, but Marcelo Meyer will probably be wearing the suit that Alex Bregman bought for him on the team plane when they start the road trip on Monday, which is also really cool. So a lot of wide-ranging thoughts on all of this. Meyer is here, and what I am hoping is that he is here to stay. He's probably going to be your third baseman until Alex Bregman comes back, and that's just going to have to be the way that it's going to be. What I would like to see is if you believe Marcelo Meyer is not your third baseman of the future, but possibly your shortstop of the future, that's the move that we need to start talking about right now. I know somebody has to play third base. I'm fully aware of that. We, as Brian piped in at the beginning of the segment, somebody then does have to play third base. That is a very astute observation about how baseball works. So here is what I propose to you. I am proposing that Marcelo Meyer plays shortstop for the Red Sox. Starting, it's not today. I saw the lineup. He's back at third base today. So we can start it tomorrow. Fine. I want him as the shortstop of the Red Sox. And if you are committed to having Christian Campbell eventually be the first baseman, why not rip both Band-Aids off at once? If you're going to have a stopgap at first, in, say, let's say Nick Sogard for the time being. He can also play third. He showed that yesterday when you moved him from first to third in game two. And then you moved Marcelo Meyer to shortstop when you pinch hit for Trevor Story after two at-bats, which was, oh boy, that's about as bad as it gets. But you pinch hit after two at-bats, you make those changes, Sogard goes to third, Meyer to shortstop. At the time, Campbell was still at second. But if you believe he's the first baseman of the future, why wait? What I can't stand with Christian Campbell right now is not that you're working him out at first base. If you believe he can be a first baseman, put him at first base. More power to you. Stop screwing around with now three positions at once. He comes back from a couple days to reset his mind because he was in a horrible stretch. Was hitting, you know, .150. Over his last handful of games. Whatever. It was even worse than that, to the point where Ramon Vasquez had his arm around Campbell in the middle of a game earlier this week, just trying to console him at this point. Then you put him back, but he's in center field. Then he's at second base. Then he's taking drills at first base. Then he's back at second base for the game. Then he's going to play the outfield again. Stop. You're adding too much to his plate. If he is the first baseman, put him at first base. If he's not the first baseman, stop screwing around with him. To where now he's playing three out of the seven positions that will take catcher and pitcher out of it.
Seven!
Thank you. Seven positions. You're almost at half of the positions on your in the field that he can play that he is now trying to figure out as a rookie. So I am putting Meyer at shortstop. I am moving Campbell over to first base and just saying, we're done with it. If you don't believe he's the second baseman, which it's kind of clear they don't think he's going to be the second baseman of the future, put him there. That leaves Trevor Story and an open spot at third base. I am sliding Trevor Story over to second base in this scenario.
I feel like he doesn't have a leg to stand on to complain either. I know he didn't want to play short, play anywhere but short his first year here when they still had Bogarts, and he sort of made that clear his first one of his first times talking. He said, "Yeah, you know, I'm not gonna play short this year." Like, he really made it clear it wasn't this year. At this point, I feel like he should just be happy if he's still in the lineup.
Yeah, I agree. And for right now, I'm keeping him in this lineup because without Alex Bregman, you can, as much as I don't think he deserves it, you need bodies places. So I would also advocate, I think it's time that we talk about a platoon there too. They love David Hamilton. Show me how much you love him. If it's a Hamilton Story platoon, depending on matchup at second base, you can survive in the short term, in my opinion. And then at third, then you are doing what you're supposed to do, which is put the stopgap in at third base while Bregman gets himself healthy. I also heard this from our guy Zach Coe, who is a producer here, does updates. He mentioned bringing Seydon Rafaela back into the infield, which I hadn't considered. What do you think about that?
To move him to third or to move him to short?
To move him to short or to move him to second. I guess would be the conversation. This all depends on where you think Meyer and Campbell are going to play.
So I don't hate that if that means bringing up Anthony.
And I think that's what it implies.
So if you're going to move Rafaela to the infield in really to kind of kill two birds with one stone because you have a gap in your infield and because you're bringing up Anthony, I'd be okay with that. I'd be more excited about it just for the fact that that means Anthony's coming up.
And I think that's the point that we're reaching. And it goes back to the original point that started this hour of, are you making decisions that are actually championship-level decisions, or are you just trying to placate guys because they've been on this roster or been in the league a while? So in that hypothetical scenario, let's say Marcelo Meyer is supposed to be the shortstop of the future of the Boston Red Sox. It is fill in until Bregman is healthy at third, Meyer at short, Rafaela at second, Campbell at first, Anthony in left, Duran in center, Abreu in right, Carlos Narvaez catching, Rafael Devers your DH. I like that a lot, man. I really, really do. It finally pulls the plug on the story mess, debacle that this thing has become.
I think if nothing else, taking Story out proves to the fans that you're being serious about it. Because right now it feels like the only reason he's still playing is because of the contract, and you don't want to, you know, for lack of a better term, eat that money.
Yeah.
And at least shows your fans that you're serious about winning.
Right. And there is a nuanced way of doing this. I'm not saying that you necessarily need to DFA him, send him to Narnia, send him back to the Quincy Little League, even though that's kind of seems to be what he needs. He couldn't get a hit the first time up against the position player that was pitching. That's how bad it's gotten right now. He got a hit the second time around. But again, the Red Sox sent like 18 guys to the plate that inning. You know, the position player's arm was really starting to wear down at there. So you don't need to banish him for eternity. It's very clear that he is perceived as a leader and a veteran presence and a guy that guys can go to. He's very well liked in this clubhouse. So there are ways to have him around without putting him out there every day, because you're right. Right now, he is not talented enough to be considered one of the 26 best players in the Red Sox organization right now. And you need to start putting your roster together like you actually want the best 26 players to be out there every single day. Text from the 860, Meyer at shortstop, get Story out of the Red Sox organization, period, with a period at the end of it. That works. And then we have a robot radio host right now, so why not robot umpires?
Wait, for that first text, he wrote the word period and then put a period?
He did. So it really emphasized.
Okay,
he wanted that.
He wanted that. He was done after that.
He wanted that punctuation in there. Yeah. And also the text from the 617 is on to me. Yeah, this is my fake voice. I do not talk like this. I have a high, like, pipsqueak kind of voice when I get off the air, because that'll happen. That's absolutely the case. 617-779-7937. Sneaking a call real quick before we go to break. Mike is in Boston. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Hey, guys. Good morning. First of all, I want to thank the veterans as well for their service. And also, I get your advice on a parlay I got on the Sox game. But
let's
also, I got to mention, I did hit 2 3-leg parlays last night on the Oklahoma City game.
Sick brag, bro.
That makes two in a row.
All
so
right.
I'm kind of a swami now. So my picks are Marcelo Meyer. My picks are Marcelo Meyer to have over 0.5 bases total.
Okay.
I have Beulah to have under 4.5 strikeouts.
Okay.
And Crema to have under 5.5. I think it's Meyer's day. I think he's gonna hit a nice double off the wall today.
Nice double off the wall. All right, Mike. First of all, dinner on Mike, apparently, after hitting a couple of parlays. The Buehler, I think Buehler's going to come back and kind of shove today. I'm really curious to see, because he seems like the kind of guy who takes these things personally in a good way, where I feel like he's going to feel as though he has something to prove. He's also in a situation where him eating innings is almost a necessity. So I don't know if I love the under strikeout number for Buehler, but I'm all in on believing in Marcelo Meyer today. You get the first game jitters out. It's very clear yesterday was a chaotic day. He forgot his car keys. He had to get a ride from Worcester from a poor clubby. Can you imagine being the WooSox clubby that was driving Marcelo Meyer up the pike to Boston? That's a day to remember. That's a day at the dinner table that you're going to talk about. All right, 617-779-7937. Join the Red Sox conversation if you'd like via phone and via text. Getting you ready for Game 4 of the Red Sox series against the Orioles. We'll continue talking Boston Red Sox baseball after this.
That makes two in a row.
All right.
Kind of a swami now.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Ow.
Dan Ball on WEEI.
We had breakfast this morning, and I saw the clip of it like, throw him out, and then they threw him out.
Yeah.
But then Trevor told me that after Walker got thrown out, Linder was doing the same thing with
yeah.
me. Like, throw Alex out, he threw him out. So Francisco didn't tell me that this morning.
Brian Prezoco just nailing the rejoin songs here on WEEI on this beautiful Sunday. 617-779-7937. That was one of the worst timed laughing stories. You know, just funny. Look at what we did. Baseball brethren that I've ever heard. I could not believe it. So that came from EEI Afternoons on Wednesday. Alex Cora did his weekly appearance on the show,
and we had breakfast this morning.
It was coming off of Monday and Tuesday of that week for Alex Cora. So just to recap all of this, it was the rumor started to float around on Sunday, so a week ago today, that Cora would not be managing the game on Monday to attend his daughter's graduation. And for what it's worth, this is not a conversation about that choice. He has made it very clear how much family means to him. I think the reason he's still in Boston, quite honestly, and Brian kind of touched on this a bit earlier, is because of family, because he wanted to be close to his daughter. This is not a question of that. He is more than justified in making that decision if he so chooses, and I choose to do nothing more than respect that, and I hope you can too.
No days off!
Except for that one on Monday. So he returned on Tuesday. Excuse me. Returned on Tuesday to then promptly get ejected along with Walker Buehler. So out of the two games to begin the week, Cora was there for 2 1/3 innings, I believe, out of the...
That sounds right.
18 innings. There you get math on the fly. No big deal. So Ramon Vasquez comes in, wins the game on Monday, has to manage the bullpen after Walker Buehler gets tossed. Red Sox end up winning. Comes back on Wednesday, ready to manage again against the Mets, and then proceeds to tell that story.
Francisco didn't tell me that this morning.
I couldn't believe it. Not to say it wasn't a fine story. And if this team was 10 games over 500, leading the division, living up to expectations, and not for nothing, but if Cora had been there the last 2 days to manage and he was the one that managed wins, it wouldn't have been a big deal. It was just, I'm saying all of this to illustrate the fact that it was not a week that helped Red Sox fans' opinions of their manager. A guy who I think you can count on one hand the amount of managers who are in the class of Alex Cora or better. If he got fired today, he'd have a job tomorrow if he wanted one. And there are plenty of teams that would line up to drive their current manager to the airport to then pick up Alex Cora and put them in their manager's office at whatever their stadium happens to be. Do I agree with everything that he's done this year? No. Has he had some moments that have made me scratch my head? We talked about the whole Weissert and Hendricks debacle at the end of a very poorly executed Detroit series. That one didn't make much sense to me. There have been bullpen usage issues. That's been the most consistent thing. And it came out on Wednesday. After that story about Lindor, you know that Garrett Crochet has to go out and eat innings, and then you pull him after 85 pitches.
Throw him out.
All of this just built up. And luckily, it's kind of calmed down for the most part. But still, your starters are not going long into these games with, you know, pitch counts that are manageable, but he's been pretty cautious in recent trips around the rotation with how he's managed it. it was a very bizarre week. And we're getting texts that really outline where a certain sect of Red Sox fans are. Please seriously take into consideration the fact, in capital letters, that John Henry, Kennedy, and Breslow truly are delusional, moronic, lying specimens. And the fact that Cora is, these are all capitals, incapable, incompetent, non-manager on every level. My dead grandmother can manage better than soon to be fired Cora.
Not could manage, can manage.
Better. Can, would,
present,
will.
Present day.
Present day. Can press all the right buttons for the Red Sox to win games at a level that Alex Cora could only dream of.
Just quickly, you were talking about how some of this stuff with Cora over the past week has sort of blown over. Don't you think a lot of that also has to do with the fact that Bregman got hurt and Meyer now got called up? Like, there's been enough storylines where sort of now this whole situation with Cora at the beginning to the middle of the week can get swept under the rug because you've had such big news over the last couple of days in Bregman and Meyer.
Yeah. Like,
don't you think Cora in some sort of way kind of got lucky with this?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. Yeah, I think there's. I think that's an interesting point. I think it's kind of calmed down, and now the attention has moved because now the situation that Cora is managing is starting to get dire again, and that usually ends up taking some pressure off the manager when you look at the kind of pieces that he's trying to put together. In game, yes, there have been some warts, and I fully recognize that, but being the manager of a team or any coach of a team in this market is about a lot more than just the X's and O's of what you're doing on the field. There's ego management, there's media management, there's being the mouthpiece and the face of the team, things that I think he does extremely well. And to the people that had issues with him saying a Crochet was going to go 6 to 7 innings with us on Wednesday and then pulling him after 85 pitches, he doesn't owe you that. In my opinion, he does not owe you what the actual game plan is. He doesn't owe you that, and he also didn't want his pitcher to go in thinking I am pitching on a pitch count. So I don't think any of that was owed, and he didn't need to go out there and tell you the truth. He didn't lie. He just didn't tell you what the actual truth was, and even Garrett Crochet didn't know that. So I understand that it's been a trying year. We can revisit this in a little bit. We do have to get to a break. But the Cora discourse is getting to a bit of a toxic level. So we'll see where this one goes. We'll transition away from the Red Sox. We'll get back to them in the 12 o'clock hour. So if you have thoughts, you can jump on the line a bit later on. We'll also talk with Joe Weil, who is hosting the pregame show today. He'll cross over with us leading into Red Sox baseball. We'll move on. We have the Bruins on the table as Brad Marchand continues to play while the Bruins continue to not. By the way, Team USA going for their first IIHF World's Gold Medal since 1933 today. So good luck to Jeremy Swayman. Good
I was
going to
say,
Andrew
who's
Peak.
The goalie of that team?
Yeah. You know, a guy known for winning in these parts, and Jeremy Swayman. All right, that's on the table, as well as Patriots OTAs and more here on WEEI.
We have breakfast this morning.
Dan Ball on WEEI.
By Bokwitch, 2-on-1. Waddell with Marchand. Waddell across. Marchand scores!
Back here on WEEI, just a bit after 11 a.m. on Sunday, May the 25th, 2025. Happy Memorial Day weekend to everyone out there. Thank you to those who have served and are currently serving. We should be remembering them and thanking them every single day, but this is certainly a fantastic weekend to do that. We've had a couple of callers today who have also given shout-outs of their own in that vein, so if you do have anybody who you want to make sure is mentioned and getting attention here this weekend, well-deserved, you can include that at 617-779-7937. Dan Ball with you here on this Sunday. Brian Frazoco, my man behind the glass. We're taking you up to Red Sox baseball coverage at 12:35. And I'm going to be honest, I know there was a reason behind that rejoin, Brian. I'm a bit flummoxed on this one.
Do you know who sings that song? The band who sings?
Oh, it's Rat.
There you go.
Damn it. All right. Well put. Okay.
I'm trying to go on theme with some of the rejoins.
I like it, and I feel a bit dumber, and that's why I thank you for joining us here on WEEI. That was Brad Marchand scoring for the Florida Panthers as he and I guess Tyler Seguin, if you really want to put that in the mix, are the main attention points for Boston Bruins fans who are still currently watching the Stanley Cup playoffs. The Bruins are one of three teams that are still in search of a new head coach. So while that continues to not be solved, the Athletic's Pierre LeBrun did report that final interviews are supposed to be taking place this upcoming week. So hopefully we should have an answer to this question by the end of the week, because we're now more than a month past the end of the season, and you've seen high-profile coaches come off the market. Mike Sullivan, Rick Tocchet. You see guys that have had ties to the Bruins end up going to other teams that I would argue have just as bleak of an outlook as you would get from coming to the Boston Bruins. But that's its own conversation, which we'll get to in a moment. Brad Marchand is where I want to go here for just a moment, and we'll transition over to talk about the New England Patriots in just a moment as well. First of all, a report from Jimmy Murphy, who covers the Bruins in the NHL and also hosts a podcast with Pierre McGuire. A source close to Brad Marchand said, quote, "I can't see a way he returns to the Bruins. That ship has sailed." Murphy's personal top three landing spots for Marchand right now: stays with Florida, goes to Toronto, or goes to New Jersey.
I don't see him going to Toronto.
Him in Toronto is that's just a bit too much. I don't know how Toronto fans would feel about that. He is the first player in NHL history to win five winner-take-all games against the same franchise, Toronto, and then he would go and sign and try to bring Toronto a Stanley Cup. They do need a lot more of what he brings. I don't hate the actual fit of the player, but he was pretty clear about where he wanted to go at the trade deadline.
Hasn't he mocked them every time they beat them, too? He does that belief.
Yes.
Press conference. Like, every time he beats them in a game seven, like, yeah. I feel like I'd just be shocked. I'm surprised he's even linked to there.
He was mocking them at a level this year that was almost unprecedented, where he was sympathizing with them. He was in the media saying, you guys are being the pressure's just too much, so much for these guys. They wake up and have to deal with that on a daily basis, and it's really unfair what these Leafs players have to deal with. That's a level of dunking on your opponent that is so incredibly disrespectful, but beautiful in a way that I just can't see that. So it's been such a seamless fit for what Florida does well and what Marchand does well. They have Sam Bennett coming off the books, who looks like he is going to make a ridiculous amount of money in what is kind of a weak free agency class.
Someone's going to overpay for him.
Oh, drastically. I'm going to be real curious to see how close they get to double digits. If he as a center and a bleep disturber can make bank as a potential number one center, if somebody was going to try to shoehorn him into that. So all that to say, the reunion between Marchand and the Bruins seems slim to none, and slim just left. So I'm not really worrying myself with that as part of this conversation. But my question is simply, are you rooting for Brad Marchand at this point as a Bruins fan, or are you not? And if so, why? And I think both have some legs. If you want to justify, yes, I'm rooting for Marchand, or no. I mean, the resume in Boston obviously speaks for itself. 16 years, 976 points in the regular season, incredible playoff performer, incredible clutch time, overtime performer, all-time rat, as Brian made very clear, captain, heartbeat, backbone, whatever sports cliche you want to use over that 16-year tenure. Stanley Cup winner, multiple-time Stanley Cup participant, hasn't always been his most shining moment in those Stanley Cups, but he was a big part of what they did in 2011 to win that cup, and was a huge part of what they did on offense year over year over year, and was a huge part of the culture and the tone and the way that the Bruins played when they were consistently winning in the regular season and winning in the first couple rounds of the playoffs with those really great rosters. He was centerfold in what they did. So if you're rooting for a guy who gave a ton to this franchise, then I can't blame you. But he's on the Florida Panthers. The Panthers have really, and I heard this brought up on Jones and Keefe, and it kind of put it into perspective. The Florida Panthers are the biggest target for Bruins fans right now. There have been a lot of devastating moments at the tail end of this championship window, which is now closed, that have been punctuated by the Florida Panthers. So he's a member of your biggest rival now. And how did it all go down? Had a modified no-trade clause. Seems like, if you kind of put the pieces together on the reporting, that he dictated where he wanted to go. And he's owed a say in that matter. But his preference definitely limited what you were able to get back in terms of trade value for this player. Brandon Carlo gets you a first and a really promising prospect, and you get a conditional. That ends up becoming a first because he played in the playoffs. So your gamble kind of paid off there. But did he really allow you to get the absolute most for what you were trying to accomplish, which was getting him to be competitive while also making sure that you were as competitive as possible in your new era of Bruins hockey, which is a retool and could end up being a rebuild if you don't do it right this offseason?
Zero? You're not trading Brad Marsh, man.
Remember that? Remember that? Man, I hope Razor didn't put any money on that, because he doubled down, tripled down on what was
refused to talk to them.
A bad, you know, we had him on WEEI Afternoons, which was great. It was great. All that to say, are you rooting for Brad Marchand or not? And I can't blame you if you are. I also really can't blame you if you're not, though, because he is completely flipped to the other side of what makes Bruins fans the most mad. So if you look at it and go, things kind of broke down. The deadline was not as good as it could have been, and you hold that against the player. Okay. That's also fine with me. But we can move on from that, because it does seem like that era of Bruins hockey is done. I also think this came up in the Rich Keefe the Rich Keefe Brad Marchand thing with his relationship with David Pastrnak.
This is how you lose your job very quickly. The fact that he's going to have a job after this is insane.
All of that, and just the brazen response from Marchand, as Brian just played.
Go pound sand.
And then the post on Instagram of wolves don't concern themselves with the opinions of sheep caption, and like buddy, you know, the best buddy cop movie you've ever seen, the Marchand and Pastrnak, BFFs forever, best friends forever. Yes, I know I just screwed that acronym up. All of that felt very, very performative, if I'm being completely honest with you. That felt like a wicked overreaction.
Doth protest too much?
Yes, exactly. Too much protesting, Doth. I felt like it was so aggressive in trying to prove a point publicly, and it does make me wonder what was going on behind the scenes. Because the biggest thing that I took away from watching the Bruins this year, it seemed like there were a lot of parts, a lot of puzzle pieces that did not fit in the same puzzle. It felt like somebody took five or six puzzle boxes, dumped them on the floor, and tried to make one big puzzle out of all of it. It just did not seem like that same, pull out a few cliches, so mind me while I do this, the same culture and the same chemistry, the same compete, the same battle, the same fight. The things that Bruins teams that were not overly talented compared to their competition on certain years, offensively speaking, they'd be able to overcome it because they just outwork you. They'd win 2-1, 3-2 games on most nights, and you knew exactly what you were getting with the Bruins. In the post-Bergeron, post-Chara era of watching this team, which wasn't that long, they just didn't really seem to have the same thing. So some of that, not all of it, falls at the feet of the leadership and the veterans on this team that did remain. So I don't know. It was just a very uncomfortable ending for Brad Marchand and the Bruins, the way things came to a close. And So I am genuinely curious on that. Let's squeeze in a quick phone call before we get to Brian's trending. Scott is in Derry, New Hampshire. Good morning, Scott. How are you?
Good, man. How you doing?
I'm doing well. What's up?
Good. So I remember back in the day when Adam Oates was on the team and he made comments about them not getting players and all that crap, and they didn't like it, and they ousted him out the door. I kind of feel the same way with the Brad Marchand, the way they let him go. I don't want to see him go back to the Bruins. I want to see him get a cup.
Yep.
Like they did with the Ray Bourque thing. So I say I'm done with the Bruins again. I didn't follow them for probably 5 to 6 years after the Adam Oates stuff, and I'm feeling the same way right now.
Okay, well put, Scott. Thank you for the call. Much appreciated. I think there's a lot of people that kind of fall into that category. So if you're rooting for him in his next endeavor, I can't blame you because he was certainly a fan favorite. And right now the Bruins are trying to put together the pieces, hoping that we have an answer on their coaching search coming up within the span of the next week or so, if you believe the reporting. We will continue here on WEEI, leading you into coverage of the Red Sox against the Baltimore Orioles. 12:35 pregame, 1:35 first pitch. Plenty more coming up after. Brian Frazoco, get you caught up on what's trending.
This is how you lose a job very quickly. The fact that he's going to have a job after this is insane.
The Christian Arcan Show. Weeknights starting at 6. Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more, Marchand. Here's what's trending now on WEEI and on WEEI.com. The Red Sox split their doubleheader with the Baltimore Orioles yesterday. Sox took Game 1 in extra innings, 6-5, thanks to a walk-off hit from Rafael Devers. However, they did lose Game 2 by a score of 2-1 last night. Marcelo Meyer, it was his first MLB appearance. However, he went 0-4. The final game of this 4-game set is today with first pitch at 1:35, and we will have the game for you right here on the Shaw's and Star Market WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. Shaw's perfecting the art of fresh. Will Fleming and Will Middlebrooks there on the call. You got Joe Weil on the Mass Mutual pregame show at 12:35. Walker Buehler will get the nod for the Sox. It will be his first start since his early ejection on Tuesday. Dean Kramer will be on the hill for the Orioles, and lineups are out from about an hour ago for the Red Sox. You got Jaron Duran in left batting leadoff. Rafael Devers at DH, he's second. Willy Abreu, he's in right field batting third, followed by Carlos Narvaez catching. Christian Campbell will be at second base hitting fifth. Marcelo Meyer will be at third once again. He is in the sixth hole. You got Abraham Toro at first batting seventh. David Hamilton at short batting eighth. And then Sadon Rafaela is in the nine hole. He will play center field. The NHL playoffs continue today with Game 3 between the Stars and Oilers with puck drop at 3:00 this afternoon. That series is tied at a game apiece. The Eastern Conference Finals Game 3 was last night, with Brad Marchand and the Florida Panthers, who we were just talking about, steamrolling the Carolina Hurricanes by a score of 6-2. The Hurricanes are now 0-15 in their last 15 Eastern Conference Finals games. That is dating back to 2009. Panthers are now one game away from their third straight Stanley Cup appearance. Timberwolves took Game 3 of the Western Conference Finals last night with a win over the Thunder, 143-101, thanks in part to Anthony Edwards, who scored 30 points. Thunder still lead that series 2-1. And Game 3 between the Knicks and Pacers is today from Indiana with tip-off at 8 o'clock. Pacers are looking to go up 3-0 in that series. Finally, the New England Revolution played to a 3-3 draw yesterday with Sporting KC. They will take the field again on Wednesday when they take on DC United. I'm Brian Frazoco. That's what's trending on WEEI and on WEEI.com. More Dan Ball coming up after this.
Dan Ball on WEEI.
Drake May threw 4 interceptions at the OTA practice. Big deal or no big deal?
Not a big deal. Not at all. No matter how much other people try to make it a big deal, it is not a big deal. So what are they going to do? They are going to instill fear in you. Oh, my God. Drake May threw 4 interceptions. Oh, my God. This is what he did last year. Oh, my God. There's another offensive coordinator. Oh, my God. There's another playbook. They are ruining him. This is the from the playbook, how to ruin a young quarterback.
Greg Bedard on his podcast with Nick Cattles talking about Drake May. God forbid Drake May threw interceptions. God forbid. 4-for-8 and 4 interceptions to start day 2 of OTAs for the Patriots earlier this week.
Our guy Ted said it best. He goes, that's hard to do.
That's right. That's right. Drake May putting up eye-popping stats even for OTAs in the middle of May. Back here on WEEI, thanks for being with us here on this Sunday. We have Red Sox baseball coming up in just a little over an hour, and we'll catch up with Joe Weil, the pregame host for the Red Sox today, at about 12:15, 12:20 or so before he gets set and takes over for Red Sox pregame coverage. We're going to talk for a moment about the New England Patriots. Mike Reese, as he does each week, put up his news and notes column on ESPN. Always a good read to get caught up on the different details going around with the Patriots during what is a slower time during the offseason, of course. But we discussed it on the afternoon program earlier this week, overrated teams in Boston sports, who is being the most or the least overrated. And just taking a general temperature of fans of other teams. Bruins fans, we just dove into a player that no longer plays for the team to cover hockey today. So the Bruins are picking seventh in the draft. They are entering retool/rebuild territory.
I'd say properly rated.
Properly rated?
The Bruins, right? I don't think anyone's overrating them.
No, that's fair. They may have been overrated at the beginning of the season. Right now, they are certainly properly rated. You're right about that. So taking a temperature of Bruins fans, they are low. Celtics fans are a bit concerned over where things are going to go this offseason and what the roster is going to look like with now no Jason Tatum, likely for the better part of season, if not the entire season, depending on if they get to the playoffs or not. And Red Sox fans are still very divided on this team, as they have been for probably every year since 2021. So that leaves one team and one team only, and that is the New England Patriots. And cause for optimism, yes, there certainly is. And that brings us to the performance of Drake May this week at Patriots OTAs. A note from Mike Reese. One of the headlines from last week's practice, watched by reporters, was quarterback Drake May throwing four interceptions. May then completed seven of his next eight passes. Those who were at Thursday's close to the media practice, held inside due to the rain, described him as sharp and turnover free. Really? Notice the beginning part of that sentence, will you? Counselor, I would like to point you to those who are at Thursday's closed to the media. So there were no objective observers watching Drake May being sharp and turnover free. It just happened to be a source, potentially inside the Patriots organization, who is taking a stand, Brian. Sticking their neck out and saying that Drake May was turnover free.
And it's interesting that they use that term, right? What's the number one concern that Patriots fans or people who cover the NFL have with Drake May?
Turnovers.
So it's just interesting to say that not just accurate, not making plays, not using his legs, not extending, like not understanding the new Josh McDaniels offense, which I think is, to be honest, when I'm looking at OTAs, that's probably the number one thing I'm looking at. How's McDaniels incorporating him into his offense?
The installation of the offense.
Does it look different than it did with Brady and Mac Jones? Is he doing new things to, incorporate Drake May's skill set, his athleticism? How is Drake May adapting to it? None of that. It's what was the concern last year and the first day of OTAs? Turnovers.
Right.
And that's the one that they go to. It was just, to your point, an interesting way to go about saying how he played.
Of all the takeaways that you could have from day three, it means they heard the blowback from Tuesday. They had Wednesday as an off day. And then Thursday, we need to make sure that fans read, see, hear, etc. one thing about our quarterback and one thing only. And that is that he didn't throw the ball to the other team. That's what they needed our takeaway to be. And that's why I read that and I go, I don't really care. I don't even really necessarily believe it. And even if I did, I don't really care, because that's, and I'm also not slandering Mike in any way. He's doing great reporting. He's reporting what his sources are telling him. That's his job. The Patriots PR machine job is to put out the narrative that they want when there are no eyeballs there to see it outside of the organization. So none of this is actual evidence of there not being turnovers. Quite honestly, it almost kind of tips your hand to, hey, maybe there were. They want so aggressively for people to think that Drake is not turning the ball over that we need to go right to Mike Reese. And the first thing we need to say is, hey, this dude knows how to throw the ball to his own team better than anybody I've ever seen. So I'm not reading into anything one way or another. I didn't care that he threw four picks on Tuesday, and I don't care that they're saying that he didn't throw any picks on Thursday. To your point about what this week is supposed to be about, I'm not concerned that on day two of OTAs, day two of the installation of what is supposed to be one of the more complex in terms of play style and also play wording complex or playbooks that you can find, I'm not too worried if it's going to take him a little bit of time. Again, if it's November and we're talking about him throwing four picks, then we need to start having some difficult conversations. I also think that there wasn't enough attention on Tuesday on behalf of Drake May given to the fact that Stephon Diggs wasn't there. If we're going to continue to have this comparison of Drake May is supposed to be Josh Allen light, that the thing that was put out there before he was drafted, as he was drafted, and then as he was going through the year, and you kind of started to see a little bit of, oh, this kid's a pretty good dual threat, big presence as a quarterback. What was the knock on Josh Allen at the beginning of his career? It was turnovers. Who ended up helping that? It was Brian Daboll, his offensive coordinator, who came in, and as we saw from Hard Knocks offseason last year, has a very complex but very smart way of observing offense and installing offenses on these teams. Offensive coordinator and his wide receiver, at the time, more of a superstar, more of a true number one than he is right now, but still as reliable as ever. Top 10 in receptions before he got hurt, Stephon Diggs. And Diggs was not there. So day two of OTAs, as McDaniels is trying to teach this offense on the fly, but also adapt it in a way that May will be able to understand and work with as was acknowledged in press availabilities in the last week or two. Adapting the offense with May, without Diggs, day two of OTAs. Nothing burger. It's a nothing burger.
But I'd also like to extend that to fans, right? Because all the fans who said, well, it doesn't matter, and no, I'm not talking to you, Fitzy, but I'm sort of talking to you, Fitzy,
okay,
that four interceptions doesn't matter at OTAs, right? Well, then Thursday shouldn't matter at all either. The
right.
fact that he wasn't throwing interceptions shouldn't matter to you either, because the fact that he did throw four interceptions, that didn't matter either. So when Mike Reese sends this out and puts this out and people are reacting on Twitter, or people reacting wherever they react to it, I don't think that they should be feeling good about the fact that he wasn't throwing interceptions, because they weren't feeling bad about the fact that he was throwing four interceptions a few days before.
Right. Yes. Well put. That's none of this registers on my radar right now. Because it's not, right now, it's not anything tangible. It's a dream of what could be versus what could be. And I know that sounds like I'm repeating myself, but allow me to expound. What could be is that you have a brilliant offensive mind install his offense without hiccup, and a quarterback that is allowed to play within his own game, which is also using his legs as much as he's using his arms. And between more responsible play calling, more responsible wide receiving, more talented wide receiving, and another year under his belt, plus another full offseason going from pro to pro versus going from college to pro, all of that comes together in an offense that is vastly improved from a year ago. That's what could be. The other side of what could be is Drake May is just a gunslinger. And You're taking the picks as much as you're taking the touchdowns, and you don't really have that much with this guy. And none of that is tangible, just like the performances in OTAs this week are not actual tangible things to me. So I am choosing not to read too much into this. It is a continuation of what happened during his rookie year, but there was so much stacked against him during his rookie year that this shouldn't even really count as the beginning of his sophomore year. If I don't have my offense fully installed, if I don't have the lingo down, and if I don't have my number one wide receiver, how am I supposed to count that against Drake May? So that's where I landed on it. Maybe I'm being too Homer honkish for my own good, and we'll turn around in October, November, December, and you know he's throwing the ball all over the place, and I'm just going to throw it up and somebody will catch it, and whichever team it belongs to, we'll figure that out later. Maybe that ends up being the case. I don't know. But for now, there's not enough that's actually tangible for me to look at and go, this is a problem. So we'll see. And if I get bit in the ass, then that may end up being the case. Elsewhere from Patriots OTAs, I've been loving this Morgan Moses-Will Campbell developing relationship between a veteran and a rookie. Moses said of Campbell, he's eager to learn. He asks questions every day. He's like, bro, can we get some sets? His locker's right beside mine, so we get to talk about football all day. And obviously, he's a stud. He played great football in college. Now he's just trying to figure it out, where every week you're going against somebody that has a guy. Not trying to change stuff, but just fine-tuning the things he's learned in college and taking it to the NFL. Well put for Morgan Moses, already earning the money on his three-year, $24 million contract just by being the Jedi Master for Will Campbell to this point. So I'm really excited to see what this partnership can yield, because as much as, you know, Doug Marrone coming in is going to help, and as much as Will Campbell was playing at an elite level in the college game, learning from a veteran and having a go-to presence in that locker room and a guy who can teach you and speak to you in a player-to-player way is invaluable. So just as much as it was important for the Patriots to add on the offensive line talent-wise to bring in veterans, it was also extremely important for them to bring in guys who could help coach up and help guide some of the young players on this roster. And that expands far beyond Will Campbell, in my opinion. That goes to a guy who left a lot on the table in Caden Wallace. That goes to a guy who I think still has potential but is yet to reach it in Cole Strange. I think there are a lot of younger players that still haven't lived up to what you've wanted from them that can benefit tremendously from having a guy like Morgan Moses in the mix. Will Morgan Moses make Will Campbell's arms longer, Brian? The answer to that is no. That's still going to be something that is going to be talked about until it's not. But a veteran can also help counsel a guy to, if maybe he is missing certain physical attributes that are usually attached to elite players of the position. Okay, so how can I overcome that? How, from a body placement, footwork, positioning, movement, efficiency of movement, explosiveness perspective, with all of those things combined, how can I overcome what is apparently going to be the shortcoming that is going to ruin Will Campbell's career? Apparently. That's what I've been told. So I am a huge, huge fan. One of my favorite things that I've seen come from the very, very beginning, the infancy of this Patriots team trying to put all these pieces together. One of my favorite things is that those two have been joined at the hip, it seems, from the very beginning.
He's such a homer. He's such a homer.
And I'm proud of it, Jack. Man, something about Jack Edwards just makes me miss competitive Bruins hockey. No disrespect to Judd Surratt. I think he does a really nice job. But Jack Edwards in his prime, when the Bruins were in their prime, hockey night in Boston.
Boston used to have some great play-by-play guys.
Don Arcillo, Jack Edwards.
Gorman, Mike Gorman and Tommy.
Yeah, 100%.
Just the crews that we had on some of these broadcasts, we were spoiled.
We certainly were.
I mean, good teams, but the broadcasts, man.
Yeah. It's always going to be Don and Jerry for me. Always, always, always. Love Jack and Brick.
Was it Pizzagate?
Yes. Yes, I don't have my Telestrator, but here comes the pizza. 617-779-7937. Interesting note from Pro Football Focus as well. Kyle Williams could end up being the top target in an offense with a good quarterback by the end of the season. That's nothing more than just a quote card that I saw on Twitter, but there's certainly a lot of hype around Kyle Williams as the Patriots continue to sort through what their wide receiving group is going to look like. And maybe the name, other than Drake May and interceptions, that you've heard more than almost anybody else through OTAs is Efton Chisholm. Undrafted free agent out of Eastern Washington, set a school record 120 receptions for 1,311 yards and 13 touchdowns this past year. Josh McDaniels loves himself a slot receiver. And so you have to see it play out at the professional level, obviously, but the details of Efton Chisholm in comparison to a guy like a Danny Amendola, and if you really want to expand to an Edelman or a Welker, obviously those are pie in the sky. Like, you'd love for him to be half of what those guys were. But He certainly fits the bill attribute-wise for what he does well. Reliable slot receiver, can catch passes in traffic, can move quickly. All of those different details make him a really intriguing bottom of the depth chart slot receiver, kick returner, punt returner kind of weapon for this offense to have at a position that has shown in years past just how valuable it is for Josh McDaniels to operate his offense and for, at the time, Tom Brady to operate the offense. So does Drake May have a safety blanket that's already established in Stephon Diggs? And does he have a burgeoning safety blanket and a guy that could really be a reliable gadget, certain situation receiver in Efton Chisholm? It's very early. But as you really try to make the most out of wide receiver depth chart spots 5 and 6, he's an interesting name. Certainly an interesting name and a guy who profiles as somebody who the Patriots have had a lot of success with in the past. Okay,
he'd
so
be lit.
Those
he'd
are
be off the hizzy.
Do I sound that bad saying that?
That was Andy.
I know. Whatever. 617-779-7937. The same guy that says grandpa gets a chill now at this age, saying that kind of stuff. Okay. Excuse me. When we return, we talked about the current day Patriots. That is always fun. I would be remiss if I didn't get a chance to talk about Ring Cam Gate, Pablo Torre, and Bill Belichick and Jordan. The story that simply will not stop developing. Something new every single day. As much as we want to turn our heads away from the car wreck, it just on keeps going. We'll do that next.
Our phone lines are open.
The Red Sox Station.
WEEI, New England Sports Original. This is Dan Ball on WEEI.
As a new host, I tried to make it a point to meet people, and I couldn't meet her right when she arrived. So I came in, and I'd come off the golf course, and we were just chatting about different things. And that's when she said that she wanted to know how far Danvers was. And I was like, oh, are you getting married? She's like, no, I compete in pageants. And I said, well, we're members at the golf course. You should come play with us. My friends have clubs they can lend you.
Yeah, she said she played. That's
awesome. Yeah, she said she played, and she also said she prefers a men's senior shaft. So I just sort of didn't really think much about that until later. She said she prefers a men's senior shaft.
All right, that's your best one of the day, Brian. Well done. Well done. Back here on WEEI. We'll just spend a couple of minutes on this. Because I did not play for Bill Belichick. I'll leave Ted Johnson to talk about it from that perspective. And B, understand that this story is continuing to be a bit uncomfortable, so we don't need to go into a real tremendous breakdown. Because nothing has actually happened yet. All of the Bill Belichick and Jordan Hudson stories, and by the way, that was from Pablo Torre, finds out, as Pablo continues to do an outstanding job.
God's work.
As a journalist, uncovering the dirty details of a story that I don't think we even really knew we wanted to know. And there are plenty of people who are sick of hearing about it, which is why I saved it for a 45 segment. And we'll get back to the Red Sox to start the 12 o'clock hour before we get into coverage of their game against the Baltimore Orioles. All of this comes together into one main idea or one main question, one hypothesis in my case study, which is, what does UNC think about all this? And when UNC kicks off their season, is all of this just going to magically disappear? And I really do wonder about this. So the most recent findings, depending on what rock you've been living under this past week, were from Pablo Torre, where he was able to uncover details about the famous Bill Belichick ring cam video. As it turns out, the ring cam was connected to an Airbnb rental in Winthrop, and the owners of the Airbnb had the ring cam video. They did not themselves, or so they claim, share the video with the press. They instead sent it to friends, essentially being like, guys, is that Bill Belichick that's staying in our Airbnb? It was not rented out to Bill. So that only leaves one other possible option who could have been rented out to. Found out where the Airbnb was. Pablo then went and took a tour of the Airbnb, interviewed the proprietors, which is where that clip of the golf pun that they must have been waiting all day, all week, or maybe even for years to tell that story to somebody with a camera and a microphone.
So she prefers a men's senior shaft.
Like, how long you been sitting on that joke? An infinite amount of time waiting to just fight, just punchline, A-plus punchline. Could go in any tight five-minute set, that punchline. So all of this, again, comes together. First of all, it gives us information because that video was out of left field and had no context behind it when it was shared a couple of years ago. What Pablo Torre has done in his show, he uncovered that, but he also uncovered more about the timeline between Bill Belichick and Jordan Hudson that goes back into his days with New England. He found photos because they have, I'm gonna try to paraphrase what it actually is. They have photos that they take from around the stadium, fan experience photos. They do a time lapse, you know, hour by hour as the stadium fills up, so you can get pictures of yourself in the stands at Gillette Stadium enjoying the game, cheering for the team, whatever. So he went back and found a game in, I think it was November of 2023, where there is Jordan, and what seemed to be maybe her dad and her brother or two. It may not have been family members. That's just kind of what it looked like. She posted a photo of her with two gentlemen at the game. I shouldn't even speculate on who it was. Her and two gentlemen, older and a younger gentleman, at the game. And then Pablo matched that photo up with the fan experience camera that they have at Gillette to kind of track down, oh, she was in the picture multiple years before. And then there was the storyline that came out of her purposely wearing very flashy and brightly colored clothing so that Bill could pick her out of a crowd and confirm that she was there. So all of this, it's strange, it's bizarre, and it's just, it's an uncomfortable watch and an uncomfortable listen when we have to talk about it. But the reason that it's gotten the kind of play that it has, and loudmouths like me are talking about it into a microphone on the radio, is it's because it's about the coach of the greatest football generation that we've ever seen. A guy who won six rings here, eight rings total, a defensive mastermind, the co-architect with Tom Brady of the reason why the New England Patriots still play in Foxborough and play at Gillette Stadium and don't play in Hartford, Connecticut or whatever. This is the greatest coach of all time, or a top three at on a bad day coach of all time. And this is what's happening now. And I think what intrigues Patriots fans so much about this is how much of this was going on at the end, when all we were talking about with Bill at the time in the post-Brady era was, well, he's kind of GM Bill has lost his touch and Coach Bill seems to not be too far behind. But then you kind of wonder, okay, so what else was going on behind the scenes? And if that was going on in New England, how does UNC feel about this happening with their program right now? Do they like the attention? Do they like the financial benefit, the, you know, endless interviews that UNC head coach Bill Belichick is getting on Good Morning America and ESPN and Ryan Clark's show and all that kind of stuff and CBS Sunday Morning? They probably didn't like that one that much. And then how does this impact the football team? Does this help the football team? Does it help the institution at all? And what does all of this mean to his legacy if for some reason this does negatively impact the UNC job and the UNC program and his ability to try to build a winner? As him and Mike Lombardi say, they're just thrilled and relieved to get out of the pro football game. Fascinating to me. The individual details, can take or leave them. Ring cam video, funny. You know, entertaining. Oh,
those are the best parts.
I know. But
learning more about this old perv.
Yeah, exactly.
Making this girl red pants, strutting out of Airbnbs, doing, you know, walks of shame, boobs out at, you know, 8 a.m. I mean, I think to me, this is the best part. I could care. I'm not a big college football guy, so maybe this is just me. And sure, I'll be interested. I'll watch a little bit of the games come Saturday just because, I don't know, I don't really follow much else about college football. And it'll be interesting to see if this does translate to wins or losses on the field.
Right.
But to me, all this extra juicy gossip stuff, this is the best part. This guy, I mean, we've all heard stories about, you know, him and women in the past or whatever, but I mean, this old perv is really just showing everybody his true colors in this story. I think it's great. It is awesome.
I understand that. It's salacious. It's stuff, you know, it's tabloid kind of stuff that's coming out of this. And that is inherently very entertaining. But I am just so fascinated by what happens next and how does this potentially tie into football. I don't know. We'll get into more of that as the days and weeks go along. But stay tuned, because it seems like this thing is going to continue to grow and change and shift. And however it continues to grow and change and shift, we'll continue to cover that. Let's get back to the Boston Red Sox. They play game 4 of their series and game 10 of their homestand against the Orioles this afternoon. We'll get you ready for that next.
So she prefers a men's senior shaft.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.